Hey, this is Scott from NerdSync, and you're listening to Play Comics on the Brain Trust Network.
And welcome to Play Comics, the show where we look at video games based on comic properties and how well they stick to that source material. I'm Chris, and today with me, I have John and Kenrick. How are you guys doing today?
Good, man. Thanks for having us.
Pretty good. Yeah, thanks for having us here, man. This is awesome.
I know, we've spent a while getting this one set up, but it's definitely worth it, because today we are looking at a halfway cheater game, X-Men for the arcades.
Yeah.
Halfway cheater game.
Well, like that. So here's the thing. X-Men for the arcades, it was just an arcade game for the longest time.
Right. Yeah.
And then for PS3 and 360, they decided to put it in the virtual store there. So technically it came out on consoles, which is good enough.
Right. It counts. All right.
Yeah. That's funny.
And it's a fun game.
Dude, I didn't know that it was the 360, not the original Xbox?
No, it was 360 because it was all the digital stuff.
Yeah, I had to go back. It's been so long because the last time I played it was in the arcade in probably 1991. So I had to go back and watch it and watch it on people playing it on YouTube, which they were probably recording off of the 360 or off of PS3. So it was or an emulator.
That's most of what I found too.
Yeah. So you know, and it looked. I remember seeing it as soon as I saw it. It reminded me of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from the same time, which I think came out before that. Which were both, are they Neo Geo games or something? I think it's like, I can't remember the company that made them, but I think it's the same company.
I think it was Konami that made them.
Yeah.
Is it Konami? Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. So obviously what they did is they just took the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game and then redid the graphics, you know, rewrapped them as X-Men and called it good.
Hey, it is. If it works, you don't need to bother to fix it.
Well, I mean, it's the same game concept as like Altered Beast and stuff too. I mean, all those games follow the four-player model.
Side-scrolling,
four-player model.
Yeah, the only difference is with Altered Beast, it was up, down, right, and you're going left to right. This one, I mean, you can jump up and you can jump down in Altered Beast. This one, you could actually move up, and it gave you a simulated 3D effect as you're going up and down on the screen.
That's true.
And left and right. You can only go forward in Altered Beast, which right. I loved Altered Beast because it freaked me out because it was the beast, the first level that actually talked to you. And I remember when I got on Sega Genesis and I was like, oh my God, it talked to me.
I could never get into Altered Beast and everybody thinks I'm insane, but I just don't like it.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely I don't know, man. It's a simple game. It reminds me of Russian Attack on the original Nintendo, just with better graphics.
It seems like one where you would have had to have been around playing it when it came out.
Yeah, see, that's
Altered Beast for me came out like it was out like probably a little bit before I started playing games a lot because I'm a little bit younger than Kenrick, but I remember playing it. I remember like I liked this game, but I never actually played it a lot. I only ever got past like the first or second level, then I got bored and stopped playing it. But I was like, yeah, Altered Beast is awesome, but I really never beat the game. You know? Yeah,
but we're not here to talk about Altered Beast.
No, we're not.
No, we're here to talk about X-Men. So, get a little bit of comic history here. X-Men is fucking awesome.
One of the best ever.
Seriously. And granted, most of my X-Men knowledge comes from J.M. Miles Explain the X-Men, but they do a wonderful job of doing it. So if you don't know that show, go check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I read X-Men, I think the first time I picked up an X-Men book must have been 1982. And
You're like right there at the beginning of the Chris Claremont stuff then.
Well, Chris Claremont, I think, was 1974, because I think Marvel's or Giant Size X-Men. Correct me if I'm wrong, Johnny. I think that is the second appearance of Wolverine.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and I think he debuted in 74, so that would be 74. So and then right after that, they restarted X-Men because X-Men actually got canceled for a few years.
Yep.
And then
so X-Men got canceled in 93. They did Giant Size with Chris Claremont introducing the new team, and that series was actually supposed to be a new quarterly series called Giant Size X-Men that came out, four times a year. But it had such a huge response, they decided to wrap it back into the main X-Men series and start and go back to 94.
Yep, and then from 94 on, then you have some of the classic storylines. You have the introduction of the Phoenix, and then you have the Dark Phoenix saga. You have you see Wolverine become like the most popular Marvel character from like 81 to 91 or so. And then again, when X-Men the movie came out. I remember when the game was out, everybody wanted to play, they wanted to be Wolverine. They didn't want to play other characters. So when you played with other people, it was always a fight of who gets to be Wolverine. So it was interesting. It was an interesting, I mean, and Chris Claremont, his social commentary and being able to parallel what was going on through this whole X-Men mutant and then the, you know, the whole thing of racism and prejudice against mutants, being able to parallel that with real life, I think that's a big reason that you have so many people today. Obviously not everywhere, you know what I mean? But right. I think a lot of people that grew up reading comic books are very passionate about a lot of social issues, and I think it comes from this type of writing that was going on then. And there was no hold barred on what Claremont really felt. So it's some of the best writing ever in comic books.
Just to clarify, to correct something real quick, I misspoke a little bit. Giant Size X-Men was written by Lin Wayne, the co-creator of Wolverine, and drawn by Dave Cockrum.
Yeah.
And then Dave Cockrum hired Chris Claremont to take over the series at 94, continuing off that story.
Yeah, what a hiring.
Right?
He was like a failed actor.
Was he?
Yeah, he wanted to be an actor. So Stan Lee did a PBS, like, you had to buy the series, and then they'd send you VHS tapes of Stan Lee interviewing all these people. I think, Johnny, I think you actually have. You had a couple of them.
I had the Jim Lee one.
Yeah.
The Jim Lee one.
Yeah. And this is like late 80s, early 90s. One of the episodes he had on was with Chris Claremont, and he talks about that. It was really interesting. So it's fun. You can find it on YouTube.
That's cool.
Yeah. You can find all that whole series on YouTube for free.
If I can find a link to those, I will definitely pop that in the show notes here, because that's something I didn't know about. So we're definitely going to have to check that out. I mean, this whole era of X-Men is just, like you said, it's full of so many important social things. And even when you get to where the game comes out, you're still hitting all those little social commentary issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really cool, man. I mean, it was an easy parallel, right? You have these people that are evolving that makes other people scared. And when you don't understand something, people are afraid of it. And it's very similar to what you have when you're dealing with white and black and all the a lot of things were happening. You know, there was the call for affirmative action in the 90s, and there was all this stuff that, you know, the majority started to push back saying, you know, why are you making all these, why are you upsetting everything on the minority, you know? Or why is the minority upsetting everything against the majority? But at the same time, you're like, well, some of this stuff has to happen because a lot of these things are not being addressed and actually being talked about in a civil way, right? And when you're 12 years old, you don't understand what you're seeing on the news as well. I didn't understand. I should preface it, because some 12-year-olds are beyond smart. I don't understand what I'm watching on the news when I was 12, 11, 10. I mean, even in 92 when the L.A. riots happened after the Rod King verdict, you know what I mean? I'm watching that, and all I see is a black guy kicking the semi-truck driver in the head, and I just see to me, was random violence, you know? I didn't understand the years of oppression that was boiling over, and then, you know, extreme violence happens when that happens. And I think Chris Claremont had a very good ability of writing stories that spoke to this, and then having his heroes be look at Storm. Storm was one of the most powerfulest, strongest X-Men that there's ever been, and she's generally considered the leader more than, you know, everybody thinks of Cyclops. But it's, if you go back in the 80s, and you read all those old comics, most of the time it's Storm, you know? And people talk about Professor X, and if you read those books, you'll see that Professor X isn't really in a ton of X-Men books.
Right, he's behind the scenes.
He's behind the scenes. Like, he'll be in, like, the first page, and he'll be like, oh, I, you know, it's always like, I got to get through to my team, and how do I get them to do this? And then he's on the last page after they've already done
everything.
Or he's
faking his death for the umpteenth time.
Right.
How many times that guy died? When you look back too, like I think it's hilarious because people these days, a lot of the whole shit online right now, it's like, oh, I hate them forcing diversity in my comics. Marvel's just forcing diversity and everything. All that, you know, all those arguments going on right now. But yet, if you look at Giant Size X-Men from 1974 or 75 when it came out, it's a Canadian, an African lady, a Russian, a German, a Native American, and a white guy.
Right.
That's the team.
Right.
And it's like, this has been Marvel Comics for a long time. This hasn't changed. They've always had social issues. They've always done this with their characters.
Yeah, and it's hard. You can't talk social issues when you talk X. You can't bring up social issues when you're talking about the X-Men and what they mean to comics as a whole.
Yeah.
But beyond that, comic books as a whole have always been talking about social issues. They've always pushed that boundary more than almost than a lot of other mediums, and way before a lot of other mediums. So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, like there's a lot of people going on today, like leave political stuff out of that. But you had Captain America punching Hitler in the face. I mean, that's political. Whether you want to say it is or not, it is.
Yeah. You know who did, you know, that cover is from Jack Kirby. And he actually fought in World War II. And he was Jewish. So I think that was very easy for him to draw that.
That's a very happy drawing for him.
Yeah.
I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, comics since their inception have taken on political views and social issues because. Even fast forward from that Jack Kirby and all the, you know, the World War II propaganda stuff, you know, in the 50s, you know, there was EC Comics that came out and started doing horror comics and crime comics talking about that aspect of life. And then moving forward, I mean, things got shunned a little bit with the Comics Code Authority, but they came back from it in the 70s.
They came back roaring.
Yeah, it came back hard. Most partly and thanks to Marvel Comics, you know?
Yeah, Marvel Comics. Well, you know, I think a lot of people saw the trial that the guy who owned EC Comics had to go through.
William Gaines?
Yeah, William Gaines. And I know that there's a lot of negative press about that guy. But, you know, he also was a big proponent of racial justice, you know?
Yeah, racial justice and free speech.
Yep. So you have people like that allowed, you know, and then in the 60s, you get, they call it the silly 60s. When it comes to comic books, because that's when you had all the weird storylines, because they couldn't say zombie and they couldn't say vampire. They couldn't say undead. They couldn't show any kind of drug use. There's all these rules and regulations that was self-imposed.
Catwoman had to stop being in the comics because she was too sexy and too provocative.
Yep.
For 12 years.
Yeah. She didn't come back until the late 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the 70s started happening and, you know, we had the X-Men start in the early 60s. They were kind of a hit, but not really, right? By episode 93 or issue 93, they're like, we're pulling this.
Well, by issue 66 was the last original issue, and 67 through 93 were all reprints.
Yeah, see, there you go. So, I mean, that's just basically calling it, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And then Lynn Wayne writes the Giant Size X-Men, which was a huge hit.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny actually gave me a copy of that for Christmas 2 years ago.
I think it was like 4 years ago, but it was a while ago. Yeah, I gave him a copy of it.
Yeah, it's a reader copy, which just means that it's in you know, it's been well loved and well read. Let's put it that way. And but it's one of my favorite comic books that I have, even though, you know, it's not a 9.0 or anything like that, but whatever.
It's one you can read.
It's one you can read, and I can touch it and I can go, this book for X-Men lore is really, really important. You know, it's the start of everything for what the X-Men are even recognized as today.
Yeah, it's that book right there starts the whole them being the symbolics of racial injustice more. I mean, they had it before that, but when they came up with Giant Size X-Men, the new X-Men, that's really where it took off, and they had it took a whole new level.
Yeah, well, Claremont really brought in the political aspect of saying, you know, there's a big generic push against mutants and, you know, kill muties and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's de-evolution, not evolution, and all these signs that you would see. And then he'd actually have, you know, there's senators that are involved that are bringing up all these different rules and regulations specifically designed for mutants. And then you have the Sentinels that are built specifically to control and to wrangle in mutants. And it's an amazing storyline. It really is. And it's expansive. You know what I mean? It took 15 years to write all this out, you know?
Right. And what's great too about the whole the allegory or the correlation between X-Men and everything, it's like it can whatever your background is, whatever you identify as far as like, you know, if you're a minority or have, you know, feel people oppressing you, you know, you can identify with X-Men as if you're, you know, black, Asian, white, gay, trans, whatever. It's all it's generically outputable to relating to, right? Because all those groups feel that, you know, society coming down on them or different types of people hating on them just because of what they are, for something outside of their control. And the X-Men kind of, we can read it and relate to them. We, oh, this is a bunch of bullshit, you know? And it helps spread it out to other people who don't think that way. I think it's,
yeah.
X-Men was I found X-Men on the X-Men cartoon, to be honest, I first saw it in the 90s. And then from then, I got into reading Wolverine. And I was so excited when they made the X-Men movie because I loved the X-Men growing up. It's like, that was, besides Superman and Batman, and like Wolverine and the X-Men were my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, well, I mean, Wolverine, X-Men, Wolverine, Punisher, Spider-Man, and Magic, the character Magic, who is Colossus' younger sister. Those are my favorites of all time.
Yeah.
And they still are. And I like DC more now, older. I like reading some of the DC stuff than I did then, even though I love Batman because it's like, it's hard not to love Batman back then. But John's actually got me more into DC than what I was before because I've always just read Marvel because that's just, that's what I grew up on.
And I mean, the cartoon is how I got into X-Men too. Randomly flipping through Netflix one day and, oh, look, there's the X-Men cartoon. Let's watch it.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
It It holds up so well.
Yeah,
that's how I first experienced the Phoenix Saga or the Dark Phoenix Saga was on that cartoon, which I was.
They
like,
actually do a pretty good job on it too.
They do, and then I went back and read it, and I was like, wow, they did a really good job. Yeah, they translating this to the cartoon.
They kept major plot points they had to change things for time constraints, but they did keep major plot points pretty faithful. You know what I mean? If you just saw that and talked to that, a lot of people who read the comic book might not realize you didn't read the comic book.
Yeah, exactly. And that show, they did such a good job of representing the characters on that cartoon too.
Yeah.
And I think the game, the arcade game, is based off the cartoon. I'm wrong.
That,
well, it's based off the Pride of the X-Men cartoon, which was a different thing, but kind of molded into the cartoon we know today. Anyway,
you know that cartoon for X-Men wouldn't have happened if. Was it? I think it's. I want to say He-Man or it's Transformer. One of the big cartoons of the 80s had ended, right? And you can look this up. I don't hold me too on which series it was because I'm having a hard time remembering what it was. But one of the major series has ended, but they still had basically, I want to quote unquote, money left over, right, from the budget to make like one more episode. And so instead of making the episode that they want of the show that they were doing, the animators and the writers said, let's do an X-Men just to show a proof of concept. And they made the X-Men. And then that first one that you watch, which is, and you can find the first one on YouTube, and it has Wolverine with an Australian accent.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was the jumping point for them to get the cartoon that you guys grew up with. No, and I watched that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I watched that in the 90s when it came out. I was super excited because I was like, oh my God, it's the X-Men. I don't, you know.
I mean, it's amazing how many of these things tie into each other like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's really cool. And then, you know, the cartoon is, I think the cartoon is very faithful to the source material. I think that's why it's so good. Some of the costumes have changed, like Jean Grey's, that whole face thing that they have, that weird face thing that they have on her is not, you know, was never in the comic book that I know of. I think that it is now actually based because of the cartoon. But the storylines were pretty faithful. And I remember watching it going, wow, man, this is awesome.
And yeah, I mean, as close as you can get with a Saturday morning cartoon aimed for kids.
Yep.
Because, I mean, obviously you're going to change some maturity level stuff just to keep it appropriate.
And it was
outside of that, you're pretty much good to go.
Yeah. And it was an iconic theme song. I mean, that is, you hear it now, you know exactly what it is. And you don't get a lot of, you get that with, sometimes you get that with like Star Blazers, you get that with Thundercats, you get that with G.I. Joe and Transformers and X-Men and a little bit with Spider-Man, but not so much. But I think that, you know, there was a lot of things that went into it that really made that such a successful show. And then, you know, you correlate that into bringing out the game. I mean, that's an easy that's an easy peasy hit right there, right?
Yeah. What's funny is that the game, you said it's based off Pride of the X-Men, which came out in 89, but
yeah.
the game and the other cartoon came out the same year.
Yeah, but when people look at it, they don't think Pride of the X-Men. They just saw the X-Men game. Oh, like, oh my God, right. I just watched that last Saturday.
That's why I thought it was based on that cartoon, because they came out at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we talked about, obviously, Wolverine's in it, because Wolverine essentially was the X-Men.
Yeah.
Back then. Cyclops is in here. Because how do you not have an X-Men game in this era without Cyclops?
Well, you can't. Right. He has to be there.
He's the
Colossus
Boy Scout.
Colossus is in there.
Colossus. I love Colossus.
Colossus is just awesome.
Yep.
He's just a big metal guy that talks. I'd love him.
I loved Colossus when I was a kid. I thought he was just cool, man.
Me too.
You have Storm in there. Because you got to have the actual leader.
Yep.
Right.
You've got Nightcrawler. Again, just another iconic character that everybody seems to love.
Yep.
Especially from that time frame, you know.
And you have Dazzler.
Why
weird.
Was Dazzler there?
Well, Dazzler in the 80s was
Dazzler's
actually,
cool.
Yeah, and she was actually really popular for quite a while. You know, her comic book went to, it went to like 63 issues, maybe a little over 100 issues, something like that. It wasn't like a fly by night though. It was enough that she was popular, and she was part of the Dark Phoenix storyline. And so she was a well-known character, and a lot of people liked her. So it made a lot of sense. And when she came out, she was all about disco, but disco was giant then.
Right.
And she changed with the musical times, so, yep. I mean, there's that.
And plus,
it seems weird looking back on it, though, because you have all these super iconic, everybody know who they are now, all over the place, and Dazzler.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what the thing is Dazzler's comic book run, she has some of the most classic covers. Not because of the stories inside, but because they are so 80s. You know what I mean? They have, like, it almost feels like you're looking at a Miami Vice comic book, or you're looking at a Knight Rider comic book, or you're looking at these things that define the 80s, and everything on her covers is trope to the 80s. And it's amazing. It's awesome, actually, when you go back now and look at them. Not when they came out, but now, today.
Yeah. I mean, you're going through fighting Magneto. Obviously, you have Magneto. This is on one of his villain binges and not on when he's leading the Young Mutants or anything. Sentinels all over the place.
Yeah.
Juggernaut and the White Queen and Mystique.
Yep. You fight the Wendigo.
The Wendigo, yep.
Who's the first person you fight? Is it Pyro?
I think it's Pyro, isn't it?
On the first level that you get to, and then you fight Pyro.
And the first guy's Pyro. The second guy's Wendigo.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there was 43 issues of Dazzler. I just looked it
43.
Up.
There you go.
Well, there was 42 in the original run, but they printed in January of this year, they printed issue 43.
Oh. 42 in January. Wait.
Yeah,
say that again?
42 in the original run that ended in 86, and then in January of this year, through Marvel Legacy, they printed another issue to a lot of old comic series. So Dazzler got issue 43, came out in January of this year.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, the Marvel did that to a bunch of old series that had to give him one more issue.
Okay, so we start off with Pyro, and then Wendigo. Who's the third level?
I don't remember. I just remember playing this game at the arcade at the bowling alley all the time, because I used to, my dad was the head coach of the bowling team, or the junior bowling league, so I'd get to play free arcade games all the time, because I knew that all the people who worked there, and they'd just give me tokens to play.
Yeah.
So I'd play X-Men, I'd play Mortal Kombat, I'd play the Street Fighter, I'd play Marvel vs. Capcom, like, just like nonstop for, because I'd be there almost every single day for at least a couple hours with my dad and my mom.
So it sounds like we've pretty much covered all the comics background we need to for this.
Yep.
Let's drop a promo for another show and then come back and talk about the game.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
Remember that feeling of playing an ultra-hard video game and dying? Over and over and over.
Ah!
Yeah, so do we. Listen to the Controller Throwers podcast on iTunes and Google Play. And check out the live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time at twitch.tv/TCThrowers. The Controller Throwers, pressing start since 1985.
That was a show you should definitely go check out, but first finish up with this one.
Absolutely.
So, X-Men for arcades.
Yeah.
It is an iconic staple of 90s arcades. There's no way around that.
No. I used to go to Skateland, which is the skating rink locally where I was at, and I would probably spend more time at Skateland playing X-Men than I would actually skating, because I wasn't a very good skater.
Sounds like a wise use of your time there.
Yeah, I think so, too. Not a wise use of my parents' money, I don't think they would agree, but of my time, yes.
That's funny.
So this game is one of your classic Konami beat-em-ups. Essentially, you're going left to right, you're beating up everybody who gets in your way, and you're getting through the game.
Yeah.
I just really oversimplified it, I know.
But it really is just a...
But it's very accurate.
It's how fast can you hit the buttons, really, right?
Yeah.
More than it's anything else?
There's not really any special moves. How fast can you get out of the way and push buttons and use your special? And if you're Colossus, how fast can you go over and over again to knock everybody down?
Oh, okay.
Because he had that... His special move was a scream that, like...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Out of him. Yeah, it knocks people down. So if you're Colossus, you just get to that as fast as you can, then use it. Get to it as fast as you can, use it again to keep knocking people away from you. He was kind of one of the cheater characters in that game, which is great.
Was Wolverine able to actually heal himself? I can't remember.
No.
I remember being mad that it was like, you'd be playing and it's like, he's got a healing factor. Why isn't he like slowly healing himself? Like even if it's like one tick a level.
I would have even settled for him taking less damage than everybody else, you know?
Right.
Just something to where he needs to be tougher.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, this is an arcade game. They want you to put more quarters into it.
Well, that's true. But that's why you do like one tick per level.
Yeah.
You know?
Something. But
something to show that it's there, even though it's maybe it's worthless, but it's there.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know? Or maybe, maybe he gets an extra, one extra life.
Right, initial life bar or something.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of weird.
That'd be cool.
But
it's hard. It's hard though in video games to deal with characters who have healing factors or characters like Superman who are invulnerable, because if they can't get hurt and they can't die, there's not really much challenge to a regular beat 'em up game. You know.
Yeah.
They have to do other things to it.
Yeah, I just wish they would have done a little bit more. But I mean, this is 17-year-old me wishing. 16-year-old me wishing. Well, when this came out, 92. You know, so I was, yeah, I was 18 when it came out.
I was 10.
Yeah. There you go. I wish I had a walkthrough, because I remember Pyro and Wendigo, but I don't remember who the third person that you fight is.
Yeah, I don't remember. I remember the Magneto fight being incredibly hard, though.
Yeah, as it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. I remember being like pissing me off as a kid hard when I played it.
Yeah, I don't know that you could actually beat that game on one quarter or 50 seconds.
No, not a chance.
Well, like Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition, I got to the point where I could beat that on one on 50 cents, one quarter.
Yeah,
I wouldn't die.
Same. Yeah, Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3, Killer Instinct, I could beat all those in one quarter.
Yeah, but this game, I think it was set up to make you actually, you know.
Yeah.
Lose.
Right, I mean, they all were back then.
Yeah.
They were made to make money.
Yeah.
That's the cynical side of me coming out.
I mean, it's not, you're not wrong.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And all those fighters, I mean, you weren't making money off of somebody playing through a single player. You were making money off of people playing with other people there.
Yeah.
Right. The two player battles. Yeah.
So first level in X-Men, you're going through the city. You punch everything in the face, and eventually you get to Pyro.
Nice. Yep. Nice.
Second level, you're going through a factory. Again, you're punching everybody in the face,
yep.
And you get to the Blob.
Oh, the Blob! Oh, the Blob. That's second. Who it was. Yeah. Yeah, the Blob's such
a weird
character.
I like the Blob. I like the Blob, though. He's always like the strong, super strong fat guy that's, I don't know, I always liked it in the comics.
Because you were a super strong fat guy?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
Right. Samesies.
Twinsies.
Yep. So level 3, you're going through the jungle. All of your nice hot stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you get to the Wendigo.
Yeah, the Wendigo. That would make
because
more sense.
Because that makes sense to have in a jungle.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Of course. Right. Of course. There's no snow there. Nice, hot, steamy.
I mean, he's like a beast, right? Jungles have beasts in them, so apparently.
Only sense. That they literally call him the Wendigo.
I know, right?
Level 4, you get to a cave. You have to go rescue Kitty Pryde.
Yep.
And then at the end, you get to the Iron Sentinel.
Sentinels.
I've always loved Kitty Pryde, though. She's always such a cool character.
You like Kitty Pryde? You're a big Kitty Pryde fan?
I love Kitty Pryde, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like the one time I tried to play Borderlands, I was basically trying to play a Kitty Pryde character.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then the game got boring, so I just stopped playing.
I love Borderlands.
I love Borderlands, but I never played it solo. I always put it with my best friend. He came over and we played it together. So it was always fun because we were just, you know, drinking, eating chips, and playing Borderlands and bullshitting the whole time.
Yeah.
But
good.
I never got to play it solo. So, I mean, it's a very repetitive game if you're just playing by yourself.
Yeah. See, me and Tafine played it, and we'd play it for hours. And we had, like,
yeah.
We got every little thing you could possibly get.
Nice. Like Donkey Kong. I won't play Donkey Kong solo, but I'll play the hell of it with my wife.
Yeah. So what's the next level?
I can't play through it solo anyway because I hate the minecart level, so I have to get my wife for those.
There you go.
Oh, God. I suck at those. I can't do them. She has to do them.
My wife loves them. So after that, you go a really, really far way to outside the cave.
So far. Such a long walk.
And your boss there is the Juggernaut.
The Juggernaut.
Juggernaut's awesome. He's always been one of my favorite villains.
Yeah, I've always loved. I loved him in the cartoon a lot, actually.
I love how they did it in Deadpool, the movie.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I love how so often he's just kind of sitting there, not really doing anything.
Yeah,
right.
Until people say, "Oh, you're the Juggernaut. We got to stop you from drinking coffee." <Right.
laughs> I mean, I guess you can try and stop me, but I'm unstoppable. So let's go.
I'm gonna rip you in half.
Right. Next, you get to the trap, and your boss there is some stone statues.
I don't even remember that gameplay.
Mystique is in there throughout the level, though.
Okay.
So it's probably more of that.
Yeah.
This is where we get to the point where if I'm going to be playing this game, it's going to be on an arcade machine where I don't have to worry about money.
Right.
Right. It's going to get hard now.
We can just leave it there.
You can play them. They're out there. You can find them to purchase.
I wish I had room.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, actually, I looked up. You can buy the X-Men arcade, the actual arcade machine, but it's about $4,000 to buy one.
See, which one were you looking at, though?
I don't know. It wasn't the kill, but I searched it real quick.
Because they released a few different versions of this. There was a 4-player cabinet where you could be anybody you wanted, and there was a 6-player cabinet where you better put your money in the right spot because that's who you're going to be.
Yeah.
This is the 4-player one's $3,500 according to this quick internet search.
Nice.
So worth it.
Yeah. I would buy it. And six-player. If I had the room and I had the, you know, the money to burn, I'd totally have it.
Yeah. I would love to have a couple arcade machines in a rec room just to, couple arcade machines, couple pinball machines, would be awesome.
I love this. So I found it online, and somebody picked it up for $175, and they showed a picture of
Jesus.
It. Yeah, and it's a 6-player version, and the guy's comment is, "Really, it was only a 5-player, and the person stuck with Dazzler."
Oh man,
I don't remember how she played because I think the arcade that I went to only had the 4-player one. I don't remember if they had 6 or not. Because I was either Colossus or Wolverine every time. I didn't do
any. Yeah, I don't think I ever played Dazzler. I played everybody else. I ever played as Dazzler.
Yeah, I think I might have played Cyclops.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly played Wolverine because
Wolverine.
I was young and played Wolverine. Yep. Or I would play Cyclops because I like shooting things out of my face.
Pew, 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 pew.
Pew, pew, pew.
So you fight some stone statues?
Yep.
And Mystique.
And Mystique or just stone statues?
Just the stone statues for the official boss, but Mystique is kind of sitting there in the background throughout the level.
Right.
So, I mean, she's there.
Right. Interesting. Then what's next?
And then you have Magneto's base for the final level. You'll never guess who you have to fight there.
Batman.
No, it's Mystique.
Oh, okay. Well, you said I'd never guess, so I just figured I'd try.
No. A Batman X-Men crossover would be amazing, though.
That would be amazing.
Yes, it would.
Until I would Wolverine slice through.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, so first you're fighting Mystique, and she's pretending to be Magneto.
That's right.
The old switcheroo.
That's right.
But something's not right.
Yeah.
Because he's not using magnetism to do whatever magnets can do that week.
Right. whatever thing the writers need to do that week.
And then you fight Magneto.
Dun dun dun.
How bad was he?
He's hard.
Is he hard?
He's hard.
He's hard. Really hard, yeah.
Harder than he should be?
Yes.
Does he totally mess with Colossus and Wolverine? Or do they not even... Do they just gloss over that?
They just kind of gloss over that.
Yeah.
Which sucks because they should be totally useless.
Right.
Yeah, they should be out of the game.
But he has to concentrate on them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you have Wolverine, and then he's... Because Wolverine's going to be the most vicious, right? And you're concentrating on keeping Wolverine at bay, then you're just going to get pelted by Cyclops and Storm and everybody else. So he can't just take out. And if you have Wolverine and Colossus, now he's trying to keep track of two people. So I don't know that you could. I don't know if his powers is so that he can just like, I'm just going to keep you over there, and that's going to be the way it is from now on, or he has to actually think about that person. You know, I just hit my mic, sorry. On a very, he has to keep thinking about him.
Well, if you go by the comics, he could just rip the skeleton out of Wolverine's body.
Yeah, which he's done that.
Yeah, which, I mean, that would kind of take Wolverine out of the fight in one fell swoop.
Yeah,
for a little
that's
while,
why we had the bone claws for a while.
Right. And we had feral Wolverine.
Yeah.
But could he rip the metal off of Colossus?
No, because Colossus
is solid metal.
He's just solid. He's metal. That's it. You're not ripping anything off.
Being solid metal, he should be able to completely disable him.
Yeah, he should.
It's like, just squish him to a ball or something or throw him away.
But of course they don't.
No.
Yeah.
Because X-Men.
Right. If you're in the arcade, if you're playing in the arcade, you're in, you know, playing with some friends, you're Wolverine, your friend's Colossus, and somebody else is Cyclops, you walk into the final level, and all of a sudden Wolverine's skeleton pulls out of his body and Colossus blows up. You're like, wait, what do I do now?
Right. Can I put another quarter in? And then it happens again.
Right. Yeah. Nope, you're just it's just insta-death in this level for you.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things where, it's a game. I know they're going to have to take certain liberties with stuff. You know, you just deal with it.
Yeah.
That's a fun game, though.
It really is.
I remember playing it quite a bit. It got quite a bit of my money.
Yeah. Not my money, because I had free tokens, but, you know, it would have got my money if I didn't have those.
At the bowling alley or at the skating rink?
Bowling alley, because I had that there, too, so I played at both places. I mean, I played so many arcade games for free because of the bowling alley. For 10 years, I didn't have to pay for arcade games if I was there.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
The lady, her name was Judy, owned Family Fun Center, and she was, Swedish. She had blonde hair and, really big boobs.
And, well, she was Swedish. You didn't have to say either one of those things.
Well,
we know.
Yeah, I did have to say it because I have to paint a picture. So, anyways, she owned Family Fun Center, which was just a tiny arcade in a little strip mall. And... Yeah. It was actually pretty awesome. They had a lot of games in there, and she always got the newest stuff, and she did a good job of rotating them out. And her husband left her. Her husband actually started it, and then he left her, in 1985, 86, and then she took over, and she was there all the time, wearing the schmuck with the quarters and the thing. And I felt so bad because they had the WWF wrestling game, and the back panel was broken. And you could reach your hand into the back panel and then just hit the quarter thing. Ding, 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 ding. And give yourself a bunch of credits. And so me and my buddy would go in there and I'd reach back there. Ding, 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 ding. And she caught me. And And I felt horrid. Just dog shit. And
oh, man.
And it made it even worse because then she was talking to me about it and how much it costs and what she, and how long it takes for her to make her money back and the fact that an arcade machine has to be popular for at least 2 years before it actually starts making a profit before it's even this. And she explained it in a way that was real. But she didn't kick me out. And then when I came in, she goes, hey, I got a new game. I want you to tell me what you think. And then she'd give me free credits, which made me feel even worse. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. Because you stole from this nice old lady.
Yeah,
nice lady.
Yeah. And it was just like, but you know what? Then I was like on, I was like on her side for everything after that. You know what I mean? I was very loyal after that.
She got
Yeah,
you.
She totally got
yeah.
me. And she was super nice. And then they got the strip mall wanted to do, they want to change the type of people that were going there because they had a lot of teenagers going there. And so they put in a bar, which is like, what?
Of course. You know, a lot of those old arcade games back in the day used the same key for all of them.
Yeah.
It was the same kind of key.
Yeah, the same one they used for like soda machines and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We got a copy of that key.
Circular key. Oh, geez.
Yeah. And so we would, not at the Bullseye, but at other places, because we got a copy from one of the guys behind the Bullseye counter, gave us a copy.
Yeah.
Gave me and some friends. So we were like silver coin the mall, and like open up a machine and pop, you know, hit the button and close it up again real quick, and totally stuff you shouldn't
do.
Yeah,
you gotta
as a
like
kid,
look around, make sure the attendant isn't looking.
Right, right. Yeah.
I felt so but bad after that. I think that was the last time I ever stole anything legitimately. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Wait, how do you steal not legitimately?
Oh, you know, like walking around Home Depot and you're there for like an hour walking around and you got like a bag of screws. So you stick it in your pocket. Thinking, you know, you don't think about it. Yeah. And then you get home, you're like, oh shit, I didn't pay for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done that. I've actually gone back and paid for it. I was like, I actually walked out with this.
Whoopsie.
Yeah.
See, I've never gone that far, but I've definitely done that and snuck it back into the store and then just acted like I picked it up when I was there that time.
Usually they just laugh about it. They're like, oh my God, this happened. She goes, I think this happens more often than people want to admit. And it's like, it's rare that people come back to pay for it. I'm like, well, I would be thinking about it the whole time. I mean, I have taken like a light bulb, you know, and I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is I didn't put it in my pocket. I just had it in my hand and I went through.
Forget about it.
Yeah. And I had stuff in my pocket, in the cart, and I put everything on the cart, but I still had this light bulb in my hand because I didn't want to put it in the cart and accidentally break it. And so I had this light bulb in my hand and I just paid for everything. And the lady never said anything. I never said anything. I got home. I stuck it in the light fixture that I needed to do. And then I was like, It was a refrigerator light. I stuck it in the refrigerator. Oh. And then me and Tafina were sitting down, and she's like, I was like, she was going over the thing. She goes, oh, she never charges for that light bulb. And I was like, oh, that's because I never, it was in my hand the whole time.
Yes, I never paid for it.
And then I kept meaning to go back and pay for it, and I never did. Because it was at Lowe's, you know, and we don't live near a Lowe's. We live near a Home Depot, and we just happened to be near this Lowe's, and we just walked in there to get everything.
That's funny. Yeah.
But
yeah, so looking back at this game, what does it really get right besides being just an amazing game?
I think it gets the look of everybody right.
Yeah.
You know, everybody looks amazing in this game. They really do. They got the costumes right, which is, you know, when you're a comic book fan, that's you start to get nitpicky.
It's important.
Yeah. I think the showing the power sets was right. I mean, the only thing I would complain about is Wolverine's healing factor when it comes to actually showing people's power set.
I would disagree with that because, I mean, they show some of their powers right, but as far as power sets go, like everybody's kind of on an even playing field as far as how tough they are.
Sure, which
isn't how
it's true. You kind of have to do, though, in a game, though, right? You can't have somebody that's
But we're talking about what they got right, what's right and wrong from the comics to the game. I understand why they did it for the game, but as far as basing back to the comic book, it's that, you know, that's not accurate. You know, Colossus and Dazzler are not the same strength, you know?
Oh, you mean like physically?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I guess
like
if you punch with Colossus and you punch with Dazzler, you're doing the same amount of damage.
Right, exactly. Right. Versus in the comic books, that's not going to happen. You know, it's different. So, yeah, that's a difference, you know. But I think what they got right was, like I said, the costumes, the look of the game is very, very, I mean, it looks like it was just taken off the page of a comic book or out of the cartoon.
For as
well
as the graphics could be then.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It wasn't a huge direction.
But what about how hard Magneto is? He should be a hard villain to face.
He should be really hard, yeah. I mean, he's like the X-Men's number one villain, so he should be very difficult to face. It should not be easy.
Is Magneto an X-Men villain? I mean, they go back and forth. I mean, there's a time when he actually runs the X-Men school.
Yeah.
And he does a good job with it, and he genuinely cares for the students.
He's a villain in so much as he's more of an antagonist, right?
Right.
He does bad things, but he does bad things for what he thinks is the right reason.
Right.
So is he a villain? If you ask him if he's a villain, he'd say no. But if you ask, you know, what? The X-Men, they'd probably say, well, it depends on what's going on right now. Right. But yes, usually.
He's a villain to the people that are casualties, side casualties.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, like all of his reasons are, you know, let's get better treatment for mutants. Right. And with his background, especially when you get into like the Holocaust survival stuff.
Yeah.
He just wants to see his people getting taken care of.
Yeah.
It's a bad way of doing it a lot of the times.
Right.
But the thought process of getting there is definitely on the right track.
Right.
Yeah, his methods are not always the best, but his heart's in the right place sometimes.
Oh, all a flutter. What do you So what else did they get right? What are they got the final scene, I think, is right, right? How hard it is to beat Magneto. It should be that hard. But and I think they got Cyclops pretty much on par.
I don't know, was he an annoying douchebag in the game?
Well,
yeah, as much as anybody can be.
Yeah.
Okay, then yeah. Because, I mean, that's like the key thing to make sure you get Cyclops right, is make him an annoying douchebag.
And make him an annoying douchebag. But what do you mean by that? Because he's just very much a Boy Scout.
Yeah, you can say that, but he's more, I mean, you also say Superman and Captain America are Boy Scouts.
They
but
are.
They're not the same, though. They're different. Cyclops is just annoying.
See, Captain America is the Boy Scout that's sitting there that everybody likes, that is going to help everybody, all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Cyclops in this era is the Boy Scout that's running around trying to make sure everybody else is doing things his way.
Right.
There you go.
And going to tattle to the Scoutmaster.
He's Judgy McJudgerton. Yep. You're doing it wrong. This is why. He was kind of an annoying character, though, in the comic book. Even in the comic books, he was like, oh my God, why do they even have this guy? But
yeah, no, I mean, I like him in the comic because he plays well off the other characters. I just don't like him. You know?
Yeah, well, I think I was just gonna say, like, it's easy not to like Cyclops, but he's kind of needed because he moves the story along in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
because everybody has that friend that just annoys the crap out of them.
Yeah, I podcast with one.
Yeah, me too.
I know, right? God, that guy.
What do they, Chris? Do you go over what they did wrong as well, or?
Oh, we're definitely going to hit that next.
Perfect.
Oh, nice.
Sounds like you got something ready to go.
Well, no, not really. I was because I'm curious what they. I mean, to me, what they got wrong was, you know, it was just such. I don't know. X-Men.
There's no point.
Yeah, there's no point. There's no plot line going on. Even if they have cutscenes that had, like, to me, I would have done cutscenes that had comic panels of moving the story along, because the one thing X-Men are is it's a soap opera, you know.
Yeah.
There's more soap than there is action in a comic book in an X-Men storyline, and they don't have anything like that. It's just it's basically Contra, but with mutants.
Right. Well, I mean, you're saving the professor or something like that. I mean, some generic plot line that isn't really a plot line. It's like, oh, beat these people and yeah, you've saved the day.
Right.
But that's, you know, if you're comparing the game strictly to the comics, it's not what the comics were about. The comics were had much more depth to them than just, you know, save the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I would have rather have seen him take a storyline, like an actual, like, I know that's based off of X-Men Pride, but I would have took like the Dark Phoenix storyline and just done that.
You want everything to be Dark Phoenix storyline.
No, it's just,
if it's done right, everything can be the Dark Phoenix storyline.
Right.
This is true.
Or they could have done the initial Phoenix storyline. Or they could do,
they could have done Inferno and set themselves up for a massive amount of sequel games.
They could have done that. Yeah. There's a lot of things they could have done that they just, you know. But Konami was not known for having, you know, a bunch of sequels or anything like that. They pumped out a lot of games then, you know. And that's what they did. I mean, you even had the Neo Geo consoles, the big arcade consoles that they would get in, and it would just be a ton of Konami games within it. And you could choose, like, you know, 20 different games and just choose which one. You put your quarter in, choose the game you want to play, and you're going. You know, they weren't known. They were known for pumping games out more than anything else. They probably got the licensing for this, looked at Pride and said, we'll just do this, and called it good.
And, I mean, it's a really good sign, too, for the game that we're sitting here talking about things that we wish we could have seen rather than things that they needed to fix.
Yeah,
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Because how would you show a different power set for each character and still have that group mentality? You could do that if you said this level you're fighting as Wolverine, and the next level, and then you could have like his healing factor and all that, and then the next level you're fighting as Cyclops, and he has different levels of eye beam power that he's doing, and he's, you know, the douchery comes out, and then the next level you're fighting as Colossus, and everything's based on a feat of strength, and you know, and so on and so forth. But when you have six players playing at once, how do you do that? How do you have these different power sets?
You could have Cyclops and Dazzler completely useless in up-close combat, but they can shoot things across the screen.
Right.
I mean, you can have Wolverine with his healing factor, but he gets weaker as his health goes down.
Yeah. You would start to play it like an RPG game, like you're playing Neverwinter Nights 2 or something, where you have a tank. Colossus is your tank, and Wolverine is your tank. And then you have your
Wolverine's a scrapper, not your tank.
He would be your ranger then, or your paladin. I mean, he'd have to be something. A scrapper. What does that mean?
It's a fighter, a non-tank fighter.
Right. Which would be what?
I don't know.
Scrapper. They're not going to be able to take as much damage.
Right.
Yeah.
Which to me it would be like a ranger. I'm just trying to put it into a perspective of. If you're going to, the way Chris was describing it is totally right.
Yeah.
But I have to put it into how gameplays are today when you're playing like an RPG game, an online or MMO game. You always have somebody who's a tank, right? You have a ranger that is just a fighter. He can do long range stuff, close range stuff. They're pretty scrappy, you know what I mean? But you're not going to have them just take the brunt of everything. And then you have, you know, Your tank is going to be like your paladin or something like that. Then you have like a cleric that's able to heal, right? And then you have people that are archers that are in the back. So if you put it that context, you could have Dazzler as more like a cleric, even though she doesn't heal people, but used in that type of concept. And same with, and then you have Colossus, who would be your Storm would be like your long range people. And then you have Wolverine.
Cyclops, not Colossus.
Yeah, Cyclops. And then you have Wolverine coming in, getting a few jibes in, backing out, right? Waiting a second, coming
and
in.
And Colossus being
the
tank.
Yeah, and Colossus taking the brunt of the stuff. And that would have been really cool.
Yeah, the Nightcrawler, you could have had him be fast, not hit very hard, but if you can get in, hit, and get out without getting hit back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff.
But then again, that would change the whole dynamic of the game.
It would.
You know?
It would.
Like, because this game, I mean, think about it, Konami pumped out Turtles in Time, The Simpsons, X-Men Arcade, and a bunch of other games that were essentially just the same game with different skins on top of them.
Yeah, yeah. This is totally Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which I think was the beginning of all this.
Yeah, that was 89, and then Simpsons came out in 91, X-Men 92.
Yeah, and Simpsons was the same thing.
Same concept.
Yeah, I guess that would be my number one complaint, is that they didn't actually do anything original with the gameplay.
No, it's just the same. They just copied it over from other successful games. Yeah, and redid the graphics for it.
It just looked really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Christy, what is something that you didn't like or you think they could have done better?
That's pretty much it. I mean, arcade games back then, you had to make it so people wanted to play. You couldn't set it up so, you know, nobody ever wanted to be Dazzler.
Yeah.
So you've got to up her strength a little bit. You can't make Colossus and Wolverine so super overpowered, because then everybody's going to fight over being them.
Right.
Even though they pretty much did anyway. So, I mean, it's just kind of like with Superman games. You got to nerf some stuff to make a good game.
Yeah.
And it's just something you have to accept.
This is true. The cabinet for the actual arcade game is really cool looking. I don't know who did the art.
Yeah, it is. The art's awesome on it.
Yeah, I don't know who did the art on it, which would be interesting. I mean, I have a feeling it's probably like Byrne. Or who was the other X-Men guy from that time frame?
Well, John Byrne was over at DC at this time.
Yeah, but he did a ton of X-Men, right?
John Byrne?
Am I thinking of somebody else?
No.
I must be thinking of somebody else.
I think of John Buscema?
Maybe that's who I'm thinking of, yeah.
If I can find some X-Men experts before this gets released, I'll definitely see if I can figure out who did the art. This just in. Sources have told us, quite possibly, who did the art for the X-Men cabinet? Am I going to say who it is here? No. Is it a cheap ploy to get you to check out the show notes?
You bet it is. But you're going to do it because we've piqued your interest now, and you just have to know. And now, back to your regularly scheduled program.
The art on the console itself is fantastic. And
it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I'll drop a link to somewhere where you can find it. Because it's
big, expansive.
It's exactly
cabinet.
What you expect it to be.
Yeah, it's very eye-catching. It's very colorful. The art pops on the thing. I remember sitting, you know, grabbing the controller and hitting the buttons there, and you just have, you know, whatever character you're playing had a little, you know, a drawing of that character right on top of the buttons, and so you could see every, you know, who you were. And it was, I don't know, they did a really good job on that game as a whole. It's just a, you know, that couple things that we talked about that was not my favorite, but at the same time, at the time that was going on, those were not my feelings. It's only my feelings now, almost 30 years later, which is crazy to think.
So I probably don't have to ask this, but would you recommend somebody play this if they wanted to kind of get a little primer course in learning about X-Men?
Yeah, definitely. Play this game. Have fun.
Well, I'd say play it to get familiarized with the characters, but to learn more, like to learn in depth, but I mean, you have to go, you know, somewhere else. But this is going to give you a good introduction to who these characters are and kind of who the good guys are, who the quote unquote bad guys are, and
how cool they look.
Who the main players on the team are. Yeah, how cool they look and how fun they can be.
This is easily one of the best games we've covered so far.
That's cool. That's really cool, yeah.
I'm glad we're on this episode.
Yeah, me too. It was a lot of fun.
It's a nice change up from all the LJN I've had lately.
Yeah?
I don't even want to think about that.
Oh, God.
I was going to ask, why is that? But now I'm like, nah, maybe not.
Have you played any SLJN games?
No. No, I don't.
They're bad.
Are they?
They're bad.
What is SNJL?
Regular Nintendo games published by LJN.
Uh-huh.
It's just a publishing company, but they did a bunch of licensed stuff, and I don't know who they got to make them, but it was just pop the game out real quick, and they're not good.
Oh, gotcha. They did E.T. then.
Uncanny X-Men for regular Nintendo.
Yeah.
LJN.
Oh, I remember that one. That was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is funny. That is funny. There you go. All right.
So if people like hearing you two, where can they find you around the internet?
We are everywhere podcasts are heard. So if you have a podcatcher on your phone, whether it's iTunes or Google Play or PlayaPod or whatever one you like to use, just search Spoiler Country and we'll pop right up. And if you want to visit us on our website, you can go to scpod.net and you can see all of our smiling faces and all of our episodes are available there, and you can leave comments and you can get and you can always reach out to us. John, you want to tell them where they can actually reach out?
Yeah, man. We are on Twitter at @spoiler_country. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. If you want to just email us to see, hey, you liked us on this show and you want to ask us questions, just spoilercountry@gmail.com. But yeah, we're everywhere on the internet, and just search for Spoiler Country. You'll find us there. We're the awesome ones that talk about comics and other stuff.
Yeah, it's a really great show, so you should definitely go check it out. So that, we'll drop a promo for another episode, and I'll come back and close things out.
Awesome.
If you like video games, debates, and silly banter, you'll love Gamerheads Podcast.
Outside of your store, because I do feel like your store knows its identity. I do. I think that you guys know what you are. No?
Not always.
Really?
It sells fidget spinners.
Well.
Not anymore.
I mean, for a while.
Not
I mean,
anymore,
Matt. You're
Matt.
Experimenting
not
with
anymore.
Our...
That's what I'm saying, though. You were just experimenting.
Golf was made by a Japanese guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go Iwata.
Yeah.
Speaking of the game.
Yeah, not the
okay.
sport.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, huh.
Well, speaking of Nintendo.
Follow Gamerheads on Podbean at gamerheadspodcast.podbean.com.
A big thanks to John and Kenner for coming on the show today. It's always a great time talking to them and listening to their show. You know, we're almost done here, so maybe you should go do that next. If you like what you hear here, though, just remember that this show is part of the Brain Trust Network, where you can hear such wonderful things as Oh No Lit Class, Life, Death, and Taxonomy, Field of Screams. It's full of just wonderful shows that you should go check out. Something else you should go check out is Best Day over on SoundCloud. He does the music you are hearing right now. You know, if you can ignore me talking, you can check him out at soundcloud.com/best-day. If you like this show, though, go tell all your friends, be it writing reviews on iTunes and stuff, telling them over on Twitter, just telling them in real life, running down the street, chasing after them, screaming, hey, go listen to Play Comics. It's a really good show. I mean, you wouldn't be wrong. You should do that. If you want to tell everybody else, though, you can also go check us out on Twitter at Play Comics Cast. And a big thanks to all of those wonderful people on Twitter that helped me figure out the mystery in this show. If you don't know what the mystery is, I don't know how you got this far in the episode, and I'm not going to answer it here. Go check out the show notes. I told you I was going to put them in there and not talk about it on the show, and I'm not going to lie about that. If anything else, grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. This podcast is brought to you in part by the Brain Trust Brothers Network. For more information about this podcast or others, visit braintrustbros.com.
Sorry, my phone's ringing. Let me turn this off. Or
don't they know we're podcasting? Sheesh.
I know. Now I'm going to have to actually edit this one.
I have nerve.
I apologize.